This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Everybody, welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your temporary host, Samuel Claiborne, filling in for Damon while he hosts our Gamescom show in Germany. Joining me this week here in the San Francisco office studio, I had to add a bank of pinball machines to make it look more like my garagecade, but it's industry legend Kat Bailey.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing?
And joining us remotely is Justin Davis.
Scoop, Kat, they can't answer you, by the way. We don't know. We don't know how they're doing. We're just going to have to assume that they're doing great.
And returning champion 20 questions answerer, Colin.
Oh, Guten Tag. I say, I'm not in Germany. I'm in Colorado.
Now, all the German things are happening, though. We've got a great show for you this week. We'll be discussing a very special GoldenEye Nintendo 64 anniversary. It's been 25 years. I can't believe it. Some games we've been playing, and we're also going to play 20 Questions, of course. But first, let's talk about all the cool stuff we've been reporting on from Gamescom. Now, this year's the home team, so we've been hearing a lot about what's going on the show floor there. And then yesterday, there was an opening night live thing where we got to watch a bunch of trailers and gameplay and stuff like that. And there's been a lot of follow-ups to that today. So I just wanted to go down the list of what I presume to be the, let's call them Scoopy games, because I think Damon would call them Damey games, but he's not here. And I think they're the games that maybe the audience would care about the most. And I think we're all going to have some highlights from the show. But I wanted to kick it off. It was hard to find a kickoff, you know, because, like, there wasn't a bunch of highs that were really obvious. There was a bunch of mediums, I'd say, for this show. So one of those mediums was the Dead Island 2 announcement, reveal. It was announced in 2014. It's been a while. That game is coming out February 2nd, 2023, adding to a big list of 2023 open world games. It was ultra-violent, I would call it. What do we all think of this one, Kat?
Wow, I'm just surprised that it's finally happening. It's been, what, 10 years or so that this game has been under development? When we were talking about Dead Island 2, there was actually kind of some surprise that it was happening at all. So... Mm-hmm. It's been through three developers at this point, and it looks fine for what it was. I think that people were pointing out that the character in the CG trailer looked almost bored when they were actually killing the monsters, which doesn't really match with the vibe of Dead Island, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then when they said, we're gonna show you some gameplay, but it was very quick cuts.
I know. Kind of I noticed that. It was like, yeah. Oh, let's see some gameplay. Then it was like, here's 1 second of game. That's a montage.
Yeah.
We don't call that gameplay.
That's not gameplay.
There's some things that are gonna freeze frame to see some gameplay.
And they were cool. They were spattery.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Colin.
Okay. Well, just sort of piggybacking off of what Kat was saying, like, I feel like being blasé about the zombie apocalypse has become like a weird subgenre at this point. And I find it really boring. Like, I it's cute the first couple of times, but I'm at the point where it's just like, if it's a zombie apocalypse, like, let it be a zombie apocalypse. But,
you want the panic.
Oh, I want the panic. Mm-hmm. I want the fear. I want all of it.
I think the re-reveal of the game looked really cool. Like, I think the gameplay looks really fun. I don't necessarily understand the goodwill that, like the first Dead Island has like a 79 on Metacritic, which is good. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very good, but it's not like a beloved, what made this game have so much staying power over the last decade? And what other game, has there ever been a game that's gone through so much development hell that's like come out of it and been really, really great and really, really excellent, like, or that switched developers, you know, wholesale a couple different times. So I was impressed with what they showed off. Like, if this game didn't have that history and I saw this trailer, I'd be like, wow, that looks really shocking and compelling and interesting and fun. But just the hype levels for this kind of caught me off guard a little bit. Like, I'm not sure how this game has managed to punch through, but you know,
punch
well
through
team,
like zombie faces.
Ah. There you go.
I think that's a really good point. It's kind of funny because you could call this like basically dead anything, and like the last thing I'd call it is Dead Island because it looks like it takes, well, we know it takes place in Los Angeles. Of course, there are islands adjacent to Los Angeles, but it's just kind of weird. It is weird to brand it that way, right?
Famously not an island, LA.
Yet.
You could just go over to Catalina. Just let's let this be, well, never mind. I was about to do a spoiler for something, but we can skip past that.
A spoiler for a previous Dead Island game?
A previous zombie game.
Oh, I know where you're going with that. Maybe a game that might end on an island.
Exactly.
Yes. So I wanted to read a quote here about the gore. So our own Matt Perslow previewed and played 20 minutes of Dead Island. He claims it's real. I believe him. He says, but fueling all this splatter is a bespoke system Dam Buster, the developer, calls FLESH, FLESH. That stands for Fully Located Evisceration System for Humanoids.
Oh, my God.
That's right.
A bespoke.
Do you remember
what I
system? Yeah, right.
Amazing.
So good acronyming there. And then he mentions a few things that it can do, but it's like it procedurally shreds zombies with each strike. It was definitely worth the development time and effort. He says, at least in the short term, the copious amounts of wet, chunky gore proves incredibly entertaining. On more than a couple of occasions, I have to pause and just laugh off a new ridiculous mess I've made. And then he says, you can even tear the undead apart with your bare hands, courtesy of Fury Mode, an ultimate-like ability powered by, and I'm going to redact why it's powered, because it seemed like actually kind of a story spoiler. And, you know, Scoop Nation doesn't need to hear that. But I think they were, like, during the Gamescom stream, there were certain things they were showing, which they, like, censored. Did you notice that? And I think that's might have been what it was. But then, like, there was another game that they showed where, like, there was like a decapitation and then somebody reaching down the corpse's neck. And I was just like, couldn't really tell what the rules were for gore in that stream. But here we are.
Do you remember some months ago we were discussing the Dead Space remake and I told you my favorite thing in the world and it's still my favorite thing in the world. And it's when you reverse engineer an acronym to make it spell out whatever the hell you want it to spell out. And so we've done it again with FLESH.
That's right. You're a
fan. I was
going
to say the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit lukewarm on Dead Island 2. And not it's nothing to do with the game. It's just not a Justin game. And but knowing that they reverse engineered a ridiculous acronym in it makes me, it endears the game more to me.
Yeah.
Love it.
Maybe it'll be in future games too, now that they've developed the system. Yeah. Actually,
we can only hope.
This series is famous for marketing stunts. So there was Dead Space and then there was Riptide, was the sequel to Dead Space already. So this is kind of a third
Dead Island.
Dead Island.
Sorry,
I got that. Sorry. Than the other.
Yes. So many deads. But yes, Dead Island Riptide was the game that had the horrible looking trophy pack in. There's like a torso. And it was like limitedly released, but also like apologized for and stuff like that. So no strangers to bizarre marketing twists. All right, let's move on. So next game I wanted to talk about here is Where Winds Meet. That's coming from Everstone Studios, kind of up and comer there. We showed a lot more of that game on our post show, so check that out. There's a big trailer, and then we talked about it on our. Anyway, I wanted to quote Matt Kim and what he was writing about this game to kick it off. He says, the trailer, which showcased numerous elements like travel, combat, stealth, and more, might seem overwhelming. That's because the developers prioritize players' freedom above all else. I like that because that confirmed, and he confirmed this several times in his coverage of this game, that it is definitely an open-world game with lots of options, which is like, when you look at this, it's already impressive in so many ways.
Yeah, I think it looks a little bit better even than Ghost of Tsushima in some ways. Certainly when the character is walking through the villages, as we're seeing in the B-roll right now, it's quite a lovely looking, I want to say Ghost of Tsushima by way of, say, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or Hero, or things like that. So.
Yeah, incredible like kind of mud and wetness effects. And then they showed the Ghost of Tsushima. I think that one of the reasons this is getting comparisons besides martial arts and stuff like that is that they showed these like amazing composed scenes of like sunset and grass and wind and nature. And I can use more games like that always.
I think it looks so cool. Like, I love this vision or this. We don't get enough sort of, well, we're getting more and more every day, but just big AAA Chinese game development. Like, we've been seeing games made from Japan and America and Western Europe our entire lives. And then every once in a while, there's a studio in China or South America or someone that shows us like, it's like it's some completely new, crazy, like it's an open world action game, right? Like, we've played games like this before, but they have their own spin on it, their own take on it. They're taking inspiration from what these other cultures have made and sort of putting their own twist on it. It looks really, really cool and makes me a lot more excited about this than I would if it were being made by, by a studio that I knew more, honestly. Like, I hope it gives them the creative freedom to, just to put their own unique spin on things.
Is this a Justin game?
Not traditionally, but like the trailer really won me over.
Did you play Ghost? I can't remember.
Mm-hmm, I did. I did the same thing I do in a lot of open world games where I played it for 15 or 20 hours and then said, okay, like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I've had enough. I think it's been a long time since I like played an open world game, like end to end. I usually get a little bit bored of them before like the game is still going before but then my patience has run out.
Right.
Ghost of Tsushima was one of the worst games that I really enjoyed ever.
It was one of the worst games that you enjoyed?
Yeah, no, whenever I was playing it, I was like, wow, the stealth in this game is deeply silly. It feels very outdated. I didn't think that, I thought the combat was not that great. Ultimately, it was gorgeous. It was a beautiful game. I thought the story was quite basic.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I was not invested in the main character. And a lot of me was just like, well, this is well produced, but I don't understand why it's getting the amount of love that it's actually getting. But it was enough that I wanted to keep going, which I think is a big mark in its favor, because I will bounce off a game pretty hard if I'm not feeling it. So
I feel like that game was like a chain of sunsets to me, and I just wanted to see the next one over and over again. It was so pretty.
When you wake up and he's petting the horse, or he's like sitting and meditating or something, it was cool.
Yeah, the haikus were nice. I don't know. I liked seeing that world, and there was a few things I liked probing the world in, but I did get frustrated while playing it. But overall, I liked it. One interesting thing about Where Winds Meet is that it's only been announced for PC. That doesn't mean it's only coming to PC, but it's only been announced for PC at this time. So stay tuned on that one. Also, you got to shout out that there's not only a vicious bear attack in this, but a vicious goose attack, which I thought was really great for our goose fans of the show.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. 1 in 5 Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This is a topic that I think was kind of surprising. There's a bunch of adventure games in this broadcast. So we got Under the Waves from that's being published by Quantic Dream, but not developed by them. That's an important distinction there, which looks really cool. That one is the one that's set in the 70s. It's set underwater. It had like its own kind of aesthetic to it. I think it looks really interesting. I always worry about the underwater level is always my least favorite level in a game. So I have a little bit of bias against underwater games. But we described this in our article. Matt Purcell describes it as Under the Waves follows Stan, an oil company diver in the 1970s who is exploring the depths of the North Sea. Underwater exploration will take you to caves and wrecks, as well as showcases marine wildlife. While beneath the waves, Stan experiences a strange series of events that forces him to face isolation and grief and to ultimately decide if he wants to return to the surface world. He can't just stay down there, first of all, from what I understand.
Stan, you have to come back sometime.
Yeah, come back sometime. But there's that game. And then the ones that need, I don't think, any explanation, Return to Monkey Island and then Tales from the Borderlands 2. So, any of these games appeal to y'all?
I think
absolutely yes. All three are very much Justin games. Tales from the Borderlands is one of those things that I just made my peace with. It's over. It's done with. It's a perfect, not a perfect piece of media, but it's like it's might be my favorite thing that Telltale ever made. It's just so underrated. If you haven't played it, you're going to be so much more enamored and love those characters and that story so much more than you think you're going to. And then, Telltale blew up and Borderlands went in a different direction. I said, we're never going to get more of that again. And so really, really excited to see that come back. Obviously the more contemplative adventure games we're getting with Under the Waves, that also looks like my jam, a very different speed. So I liked the diversity in gameplay and that, everything we did get a lot of MMO Destiny like shooters. And we did get a lot of third person action adventure games, but we also got more games like this too. It's great. It's really cool. All three. I'm really excited for.
Nice. Any other excitement for, this is not in a Monkey Island group. I'm taking it. Cause I didn't play Monkey Island games. Anybody here play them?
Island. We need, was it Ryan McCaffrey who's a big Monkey Island
fan? He is the
Island
biggest
fan?
Monkey Island fan.
So there's been a lot of discussion about Monkey Island's art style.
Yes.
To the point that looks people were actively harassing Ron Gilbert, which
I heard
think it was
that.
A big problem. But watching the trailer, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the horse armor gag. I mean,
that was great. I forgot about that. Funny. Yeah.
It's a very Monkey Island thing to reference DLC from a DLC joke from, what, 17 years ago at this point? That was an Oblivion thing.
Oblivion. Mm-hmm.
I think. But, I mean, come on. Who's he marketing to? Old people like me who played Oblivion back in the day. So, or Monkey Island in this case.
This is part of the Lucas Disney publishing situation at this point, which is I think is really interesting. And so it's kind of back, you know, this game started on the LucasArts, you know, that was a famous LucasArts game, an original one, you know, from the early era. And now it's kind of back under that umbrella, which is cool after bouncing around for a while. And so, like, you know, this is kind of a Disney game that's coming out. And I think that's a really neat thing.
To return to the graphics very, very quickly, it's not a new thing for Monkey Island to experiment with its graphics. So the first two games had a particular look, very cartoony. And then the third game was trying to be almost like a Disney movie and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then Secret of Monkey Island, or the fourth game that came out.
It's always Curse. Something of Monkey Island.
Something
it seems
of Monkey
like.
Island.
Something.
I think the fourth one, again, changed up the art style. So it's not that surprising to me. And hot take, I think that this is my favorite of the art styles. It looks lovely.
Yeah. I think like there's like the crux of the complaints was like, you know, why can't it look like these old games and presumably even pixelated, which I always like. I mean, of course I like it when things
are
looking
retro. You want it to
look
like it looked like in 1990? I mean, come on.
But it's not, it doesn't always have to be, it doesn't, if it does, if the creator doesn't think it adds to the game to like look retro, then like what's the real point of that? Like it the game is not supposed to look like an old game. It's supposed to look like a pirate game. Like I get it.
Yeah. That's exactly the point that Ron Gilbert made too, is he's like, look, like the pixel art style of the first two games, that was all we had. That was the only way you could make a video game look like it wasn't a stylistic choice. And to make it, to ape that style now in 2022 would be a stylistic choice, which is, you know, fine if that's what you're trying to do. But if you're also just trying to make a game that uses, you know, modern technology, like that's what Monkey Island 1 or 2 was. And that's what, you know, this new sort of version of Monkey Island 3 is intended to be. Which I think is a really compelling argument. Like when I look at the art style of the new game, I'm not enamored with it, but I'm also not going to go harass anybody on Twitter over it. And and frankly, that's not what I'm here for in these games anyway. Like I'm here for the atmosphere and the writing and the sillies and just all the unexpected, like just zaniness that I am very, very confident is going to spring from the mind of Ron Gilbert.
You're here. All right, so we are at the point where I want to hear from you all on the things that we haven't mentioned yet. There was a lot of stuff that was mentioned in O&L yesterday, a few things between now and then. Let's go around. So, Kat, what did you want to bring to Scoop this week and talk about from Gamescom?
I want to talk about, is it called Lies of P?
Lies of P.
Lies
Old
of P.
Evil Pinocchio game.
Pinocchio by way of Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. And it looks better than it has any right to be. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily stand out as a Pinocchio game. Oh no, Pinocchio is hot, I think I saw somewhere.
Where do you that's twist.
I think that's what Polygon said. But we've seen Jiminy Cricket and Geppetto in there somewhere. Pinocchio's in the zeitgeist for some reason. Lots of people doing Pinocchio stories. I have absolutely no idea why. Bloodborne was one of my favorite games when I was playing it earlier this year. Distinct art style. I have no idea why it's going to be a Pinocchio game, but Lies of P, unexpected winner of Opening Night Live.
Agreed.
I'm not positive on this one, but I believe this is a Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey situation. I believe that it's public domain now.
Anybody can Pinocchio it up.
Yeah, I think that's basically what's going on here. But no, it does, like obviously you see the trailer and you're like, yeah, this definitely looks a lot like Bloodborne. And then we had, I believe, 12 minutes of it on our live show for Gamescom. And it is 1,000% Bloodborne. It is even down to the UI.
Yep.
It is Bloodborne.
Yep. Yeah. It even has the white dot that you know, attach to things. And then like when you pick up stuff, it makes a similar noise. But I will say, I watched that whole gameplay segment, and what it doesn't have, at least in the gameplay I saw, is like anywhere near the kind of D&D level of equipping complexity. It has like kind of a different situation for that, like kind of a more of a, I would say like a God of War level complexity for, you know, upgrading weapons and stuff like that, which I think could be a good thing personally.
I mean, the secret sauce is the complexity.
You like the complexity, I know.
Yeah, because you can sit here. First of all, you can break the system, right? You can break the difficulty by just leveling up a lot. And
true.
It makes it a lot more manageable, a lot more bearable. Plus, it's also fun to share all of the builds and everything, figure everything out. You strip that kind of away. And
well, that happens from one character, I guess, too, huh? Because you don't have the class systems necessarily, or we don't really know, I guess. But, like, you can't be, you know, a whole range of characters because you're playing a character. Presumably there's a story and stuff like that too, huh?
There's a reason though, there's a reason that they have been putting RPG elements in everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's because people want complexity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they should put cheat codes.
The arm, yeah. With the arm, it's almost like taking that a little bit from Sekiro too. So it's just like, you know, just going to take a little bit of FromSoft stuff, you know, from everywhere. But I do want to issue a correction. I just looked this up. Apparently Pinocchio has been in the public domain since 1940. So I have no idea why in the hell Pinocchio.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why like Walt Disney was into it too. He's just like, you know, it's free. Got to do this. Yeah. Just like Little Mermaid or anything. Like a lot of those are public domain fairy tales. I mean, Cinderella, right? Yeah, that's really funny. But why in the zeitgeist, as you pointed out, is the strange question there. Colin, what do you got?
So mine is actually not a game.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is the DualSense Edge.
Mm-hmm. The Edge.
Basically the PS5 Pro controller. And it's interesting because I've never thought about controllers too much. Like I like them or I dislike them. And then I got my Series X and I decided to get the Elite Series 2 controller with it. And that thing is amazing. I love it. Mm-hmm. The back paddles in particular are like an absolute game changer. And I'm not even like a competitive gamer, so that's not really what's important there. But it's just like just adding that sort of customizability to things and like, you know, changing like resistance on sticks and stuff like that, like just really changes how everything feels. And the thing looks really nice. Like it looks premium. And the thing is the DualSense is already like a really good controller. The funny thing is my only real complaint with it is it's a little bit bulky. My hands are not huge. Sometimes it feels a little bit hard to get my hands around. And this I think will probably have about the same form factor. So it's not going to fix my one actual issue with the controller, but I am very excited for it. I'm definitely going to get one.
They kind of artificially bulked up the, maybe it's artificial, the DualSense controller to make it more of that Xbox contour instead of that kind of, that thinner insect-like contour of the previous dual axis and stuff like that, right?
We're slowly getting back to DualShock. The Duke.
We are. Mm-hmm. It's like a little inflator is on the side.
Every generation, someone does another pump into the inflator.
Mm-hmm. Until it bursts, right? Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Justin, did you have any highlights that you wanted to bring to the table?
Yeah, I mean, so I couldn't watch Opening Night live. I had to catch up on it today. And my first observation was like, this GameCom seems really, really packed in general. So rather than sort of highlighting a specific game, just generally speaking, it's like, holy crap, like this is dozens and dozens of games. And they're not just, I mean, there was a lot of like sort of trailers that's just a logo, but a lot of like gameplay and stuff that's clearly far along in development. And my other observation is I was really pleased to see how much was new names and new games from new studios. It's not all sequel after sequel after sequel,
right,
which, you know, I've already shouted out a couple sequels that I'm really excited about. But anytime it's something brand new, new characters, new world, new lore, new IP, like that's really, really exciting to me. And so stuff like The First Descendant from Nexon or Ravenbound from... it was a studio I didn't recognize. I made a note here. It's from Systemic Reaction, which is listed as an Avalanche Studios group studio. So, you know, I actually take that for what you will. And games like Word Song, and like the list goes on and on of just new IP, new stuff. Like that was what I was so, that was what really jumped out at me. It's like, we're far enough into this console generation now where I finally feel like this stuff that people have been kind of heads down on for like, you know, probably 2 or 3 years or more is like finally coming to fruition. So that's a really, really exciting time where the gen's not like new anymore. And that's great to see.
Yeah. A couple thoughts on that front. I still think that the gen will truly get underway when Unreal Engine 5 really becomes widespread. And my other thought is, I mean, if we're talking about a lot of these games, even though they were new names, new IPs, they're based on very conventional ideas, like the Wind game. It's like Ghost of Tsushima, but it's in medieval China. Ravenbound. It looks like Skyrim, and it's a roguelite, and also it has some deck-building aspects, and you fly around. And it's like, let's just bring together these ideas that have become very widespread and very popular and just kind of jumble them together into something new, or just like take a popular game and put it into a different setting. A lot of fantasy games, a lot of sci-fi games.
Yeah, there was a lot of fantasy and sci-fi. And I mean, no one's going to jump out of their chair faster and more excitedly than me when we get like the next Super Mario Odyssey. Like, I'm a sucker for sequels and nostalgia too, but like, just new stuff. I'm always most excited to see like some game really break through and say, oh man, like I've never seen that before. And that's always a really exciting moment of Gamescom or any other show.
Justin, did you see the Subnautica creator game that's like a paint like your little, what's it called?
Yeah, with Brandon Sanderson doing the lore. Man, that dude just doesn't sleep, I guess. The one I really wanted to shout out, I don't know if we had the B-roll handy, is Friends versus Friends. Did you guys see this one?
Oh yeah, that was funny.
The gameplay is crazy. It's like some card-based first-person shooter, but as like the trailer is two parts. It's sort of a cinematic trailer in the first half.
Yeah.
It's the most beautiful thing, and it couldn't be more like speaking to me personally, from the VO to the style, and it was so cool. And then, you know, and then it cut to the gameplay, and I'm like, I don't know if this is for me after all, but just as a mood piece, it was just perfect.
Yeah. I think what's interesting to me is a lot of these games strike me as almost like AA in like budget at the very least, which is really exciting because it felt like AA style games, you know, something that's bigger than a really low budget indie game, but definitely smaller than like, you know, a first party AAA game, was kind of falling by the wayside. And it feels like they're starting to sort of rebound, which is really exciting for me.
Agreed.
Yeah. Man, the animation in this trailer was so cool. And I'm now remembering the contrast between that and the gameplay as we watch it. Totally right. All right. So I should also shout out, if Damon was here, I'm sure he would bring up Killer Clowns from Outer Space. That game's 3v7, you know, asymmetrical multiplayer is like, you know, I heard from our attendees of Gamescom, actually, it was the biggest cheer in the room, first of all, during the opening night live performance, but or whatever we call it, the show. But on Damon's recap of the show, he mentioned that the brothers that made the movie that this is based on, it's based on a 1988 horror movie, also did the Large Marge sequence in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which is very memorably scary. So I thought that was
funny. It's terrifying.
Yeah. This game probably is going to be, you know, as good, I hope, as Friday the 13th, which people adore, from what I understand. Not really a game I'd play, but it's a very cool theme to see come back to a game about, you know, killing your friends.
It was funny to me because I'm on the social team, and this was by far the biggest thing on Facebook from all of the announcements, which I was kind of expecting because Facebook just skews older. Our sort of barometer for it is like, if we think that our dads would be interested in this, then we should post it on Facebook. But it's also by far the most popular thing from the show on TikTok, which is definitely our youngest platform for social, like by far the most popular thing that we've done. And it's just like, I don't know if these kids have heard of Killer Clowns. I don't know if it's just a fun concept to them. Sam, you brought something up earlier
today. Do you like my explanation?
Yeah, your explanation was great.
Well, yeah, Colin and I were in a meeting and talking about this, and I remembered that there was kind of news coverage of kids, actual children in real life, being scared of killer clowns about, I don't know when it was. I should have looked it up before the show. I didn't think we'd talk about it, but it was like 5 or 6 years ago or something. So like kids actually, there was like this weird like media panic about clowns appearing and scaring children.
It was just clown villains. Yeah.
It was just before COVID, and then it turned out there was a pandemic, and then nobody cared about the weird clowns that were like wandering around small towns.
There you go.
Yeah. They lived through the actual killer clowns. Mm-hmm. Now they want a game about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really fascinating that there's this U-shaped curve of interest for killer clowns from outer space.
Yeah, because Twitter was pretty like whatever about it. Twitter's like right between the two. So you know, I guess you're about people who are about 30. Mm-hmm. Don't care too much. People who are older than that care a lot. People who are younger than that care a lot.
That's a sweet spot. All right. So one little tidbit that came out of Gamescom so far is that Gotham Knights was actually moved up. It was not delayed. It was moved to a sooner to today release date of October 21st. It was the 25th. That led me to look at our current standings for release dates, of which this is where they stand right now. Let me just go down them. So Q1. We have in January, January 23rd is going to be Dead Space Remake. Forspoken is January 24th, so those are basically right on top of each other. Also, you can see a lot of Forspoken at Gamescom this year. Dead Island 2 is now on February 3rd, so those are about a week apart. And then Hogwarts Legacy has been delayed to February 10th, so that's all happening. And then there's a pretty big jump after that to Resident Evil 4 Remake, March 24th. So that's a lot of Q1 stuff. We also know that Killer Clowns and Midnight Suns are also coming in that time.
In theory.
So that's all Q1.
Wow.
Midnight Suns that's may crazy. Come out. We'll see.
That's true. It's a favorite game for people to delay right now. They just love delaying that game. And then Q2, we all know, has some crazy stuff. This is technically first half of the year stuff, but that's Breath of the Wild 2, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, and Starfield. So some of those games probably come out.
Did you say Final Fantasy 16 in there?
No. They said first half for that one. Is that right?
I think it's early.
I think you're right.
That might just be in my mind. I might just really.
There's a lot of speculation that Jedi Fallen Order will be coming out in that kind of time frame as well.
That seems like the right time for it, too.
Yeah. I think that we're all just kind of biding our time until Breath of the Wild 2 and Starfield next year.
I agree. And like whatever comes out before those games, I will play. Whatever comes out during those games' release dates, I just don't stand a chance of playing it.
Yeah. Biggest question mark, I think, is Hogwarts Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
That game could either be outstanding or really horrible, and I don't think there's going to be an in-between for that one.
Yeah. The new trailer was funny to me because the last big thing of gameplay we got, one of the students used Avada Kedavra, which is the killing curse, and it's like, okay, so we've got kids murdering now, and then the new trailer, they were using Crucio, which is the torturing spell. And there's only one other forbidden spell that they haven't shown yet, which is the Imperius Curse, which is where you like can control something. And like throughout the history of Harry Potter, usually they had it to have people like off themselves or do really horrible crimes and stuff. And it's just like, this is getting really dark really fast.
Yeah. The new trailer being focused on sort of all that dark magic was interesting to me. I mean, to me, this like ticks every single box for like, if you were like a kid, like dreaming up a Harry Potter game, it'd be like, learn whatever spells you want and have like choice of how to develop your character. And I want it to be open world and I want to attend classes. And like, I want it to tell like an original story and not like rehash the stories of the movies. It's like, it's ticking every single box for like a big AAA, big budget Harry Potter game. I think Kat's right that like, you know, we'll see how it shakes out, but I think that they're sort of, you know, hitting all the right notes, at least in the run up to launch. Like I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I'm hopeful too.
And we'll see if it hits that February 10th release date. Let's talk about what we've been playing. We have a lot of overlap, but Justin, I just saw you holding a play date before this. Have you been playing that?
Yeah, I am playing the play date.
You've been playing?
Wow.
It can be. I'm got my cameras all mirrored. Yeah, so the interesting thing about the play date, if you haven't seen one, I won't do like a whole demo, but it's this little handheld games console with a monochrome black and white screen and it has a little crank, and most of the games are crank controlled.
Most of them? I thought they'd all be like D-pad button, and then that would just be a novelty.
Yeah, I mean, the irony is that my favorite game so far is actually not crank based. And you, when you when you set it up, you punch in your Wi-Fi, and then every week two new games just show up. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole season of games. I don't know how many it is total. And so that's like, it's such a clever, like if it just came loaded with 36 games or whatever it is, I feel like I would like it so much less than sort of being drip fed them kind of slowly and steadily over time. And so there's a good and bad side to that. Like, it's really fun. Like, there's actually a little animation to like unwrap them. And so it's very pleasing. Like, ooh, what are my new games this week? But I actually didn't like the first two games that it came with. Like, the week one games didn't speak to me. And so this thing's kind of expensive. And then I had these two games that I didn't like. And I was like, oh, great. Okay, I guess that's my play date. But now it's been 10 or 12 weeks. And there's several games on the thing that I really, really like. Cool. They're all very clever and kind of arcade based. It's really cute. I actually wasn't going to use it for that Smite thing I'm playing. But no, maybe we can come back to me. We can come back to me at the end if there's time for me to go through one more.
All right. Kat, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Cult of the Lamb.
Mm-hmm.
Which
same.
You gave me a code for it. I got on Nintendo Switch. And I like me a good roguelite. And I like good 2D graphics and sprite work. And I think that this kind of ticks a lot of those boxes. And then, so a lot of these roguelites love to have kind of a settlement building aspect or whatever. Yeah. Because that's the permanent part of the game that continues forward even after you die.
Mm-hmm.
And this one goes a lot more into that specific thing.
Right. It's heavier on the sim. Or it's about equal almost to the kind of the hacky slashy roguelite and then the sim.
So like if you compare it to Hades, in Hades, it's just all about, okay, but like I'm getting right into, right back into it. Yes, there are cool storytelling aspects. There are definitely, I'm leveling myself up. I'm opening new things. Mm-hmm. But the main event is definitely when I'm out there. I sort of feel like the town building is almost the main event in Cult of the Lamb, where you're getting these followers and you're like deciding where you're going to put them in an almost kind of a real-time strategy aspect of it. You can read their minds and you'll be trying to figure out like, okay, but are they turning against you or something and turning your followers against you?
And you can do real mean things to them if they do.
Yeah.
So if you haven't got to see this game at all, you're seeing it now. It is dark. It has a very interesting set of kind of in-game universe, values and aesthetics and stuff. That's all about a death cult, a cult of followers that will murder for you, that you have to murder for, and you sacrifice animals. It's all very cute animals.
But also, you're a lamb.
Yes, and you're a little lamb. That has a very, very determined look while killing things. But yeah, you go to these randomized dungeons, you fight big bosses, you come back with the resources and you run your cult. It doesn't pull punches. It has a lot of like, whoa, I can't believe that just happened, moments in it. And, I haven't found anything in the game yet that makes me want to put it down or that I wouldn't recommend to anybody. I think it's so playable and interesting and fun and kind of came out of nowhere for me. I wasn't paying attention to it. So highly recommend.
Yeah, it reminds me, the art style reminds me a little bit of Invader Zim, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Big heads, right?
Big heads.
Little bodies.
Mm-hmm. Kind of cute, but also extremely dark and violent, as you were just explaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. Kat, how was the Switch port or version specifically?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I sort of want to play it on PC or Xbox or something, because while it's fine on Nintendo Switch, I'm kind of detecting almost like frame rate hitches. I don't know if that's like kind of my imagination. And also the loading times are not unbearable, but they are a bit
longer. They shouldn't exist,
longer.
First of all. Loading times like on a thing that's loaded into your system memory are ridiculous. I know what you mean. I have no point of comparison, and I think it feels like it was made for Switch. It doesn't feel like it was like stunted for Switch or anything like that. So I think I would recommend it on Switch or Steam Deck.
Yeah, I almost kind of want to play it on Steam Deck, but It's fine on Switch. Like, I am enjoying it just fine on Switch.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like twitchy action based stuff. Like, you do a lot of, it's that type of new combat which came out of, you know, a few indie games and Dark Souls games where you roll a lot.
Yeah, but the dodge rolling, it's a little awkward because the rooms are quite small, mm-hmm. right? So then you do these very long dodge rolls, and mm-hmm. so I almost feel like I'm rolling right into enemies, especially when they're kind of around right. me and everything.
Yeah.
But you get magic spells, so you get like tentacles and fire bolts and whatnot, and that could be very helpful mm-hmm. for clearing out rooms too. And I really like the axe, slow but good crowd control. Good.
Well, I definitely don't like the dagger. It's too fast.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't like the dagger. I don't feel like. But so the axe is okay for me, and I always want to get the sword. That's what I want to get. Mm. They randomize which weapons you get when you start out each combat scene. Okay, so Colin, you're still playing Xenoblade, I presume.
So I actually just started Xenoblade.
That's right. Yeah.
So I'm only like, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours in, which is like
1%.
A very small part of the game. I think it's like 150 hours. A lot of people say.
Oh my gosh.
Shabby. Yeah.
And I'm actually surprised because I Xenoblade fans, please don't hate me. I did not particularly like the original Xenoblade Chronicles. I felt like it was really empty. I didn't really gel with the story of how much I played of it. And the combat, like though it was like deep, I never felt like I was doing it right. I didn't lose battles or anything. It just felt like there was parts of it that like I maybe didn't catch or just wasn't remembering to do or what have you. This time around, I feel like, you know, the slow drip feed of, you know, introducing new mechanics throughout a lot of the game acclimates you to it pretty well.
I'm gonna pause you right there. So Kat, those mechanics.
Yeah.
How long do you learn those for?
I mean, I'm only still in chapter 3, but you know, chapter 3 is a good 15, 20 hours into the game. You're definitely still learning mechanics. Unlocked a major system in a very large boss battle, which completely changed the flow of how I'm doing things. I will say that it's complex, but not that complex, and I've been enjoying kind of getting to learn.
Yeah.
Everything.
Some of these pieces with me. And I only wanted to cut you off, Colin. You can proceed now, but because Kat had mentioned to me, it's like, I'm about 15 hours in, still learning new systems. So it's funny.
No, it's definitely manageable in that way. What I really like about it is once you have the characters, you always have, well, maybe not always, but you usually have at least 6 characters on the battlefield at the same time, which is a little chaotic, but like, you can switch between them on the fly. And what's kind of nice is, you know, it's a big open world and you'll encounter things. You don't have to fight everything. You shouldn't fight everything because then it'll turn into a 300-hour game. when you do decide to fight things, what I've been doing and I've really been enjoying is I will switch the person that I'm controlling between every battle. So every time I'm battling, it'll be like, you know, oh, now I'm a defender. Now I'm a healer. Now I'm an attacker. And so it's always like slightly different every time you're playing it. And when you're like one of the, you know, main attacking types, you know, oftentimes it's like your position relative to your target is like really important for how much damage you're doing. Like some attacks do more damage when you attack on the side, some behind, some in the front. And so, you know, that's like way different than when you're defending and like your big thing is you're trying to aggro everybody and you're trying to get them to attack you the entire time. And you're trying to get them to sort of face you directly. I can imagine myself actually playing this for 150 hours. I don't know if I'm going to. I usually like 50 hours is about when I start getting tired of a game.
To be clear, you can clear the game in like 55 hours.
Okay.
Oh.
It's just that
you gotta find that run button.
There's so much content in this game.
Is there?
It's huge.
Yeah, is there a run button?
I have not found it.
Yeah. I want there to be a run button. I want to move faster, for sure.
It's awful when you find out there was a run button the whole time. But I don't know. I'm just making
run button
jokes.
Because because I haven't done too many side quests yet, but I've heard the side quests are actually like pretty solid in this game. And so I don't necessarily want to skip all of them, but you know, I'm sure I'll get to a point. Every game that's like a really long game, I'll do a lot of the side stuff. And then when I start feeling like a little bit of like, I kind of want to move on, usually then I'll mainline it. So if I could mainline this in like 60 hours, mm-hmm. okay.
You got
okay.
this.
I could do this.
I want a full report on my desk next Thursday.
No. Oh God. Oh no. Uh-oh.
That's what reviewing games is like, actually. It's actually sometimes very scary when somebody's like, yeah, this game could be about 100 hours long. You're like, I have 24 hours and a weekend to complete it. So, Justin, did you have another game to add?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll be quick since I did the playdate, too. I've been really, really loving Arcade Paradise lately, which
I got to play that game.
It's sort of, it's a little bit of like a Sam Claiborne simulator. Mm-hmm. Where the storyline of the game is really funny. If you don't know what the game's about, it's about building and running your own arcade, and you choose how much the machines are going to cost and whether they're going to be set to easy, medium, or hard, and where to position them in the arcade, and yada, yada. But the storyline is you inherit your dad's laundromat, and there's like this crappy little dingy arcade machine in the corner, and then like very slowly over time, like I've been playing the game for like 2 weeks, like the laundromat part gets smaller and smaller as you make more and more room for arcade machines. But in the beginning of the game, you like legit, you just do laundry for like the first week in the game, and you have to do people's laundry, and you have to like scrape the gum off the, like you have to do laundry chores. And then, but then like the balance shifts and it becomes more and more arcade focused over time, which I think is really clever. And the other thing that's special is it's all these fictional arcade games. There's 20 or 30 of them, and you can play all the arcade games. And so the game sort of positions itself as like build and run your own arcade. What it actually is like a collection of pretty good mini games, like arcade mini games. Like it's got a take on Pac-Man and a take on, you know, all kinds of different stuff. And so that's what like, it's interesting. The game becomes a different thing than what it starts out as, where it becomes just like, well, I'm just having fun playing all these sort of takes on old classic arcades.
I love it.
It's great. You would love it.
How have I not gotten this game yet? It's just such a me game. It's such a you game.
Yep. I've been recommended it to Pear's loving it. Those coin doors are triggering for me. I'm excited. So let's quickly recognize the glory that was GoldenEye 007, a game that came out 25 years ago for the Nintendo 64. It came out August 25th, 1997. That's 2 years after the movie premiere. So they got a cheap license here, spent some time with it, and I think everybody expected it to be a B game. If you read The Guardian's great piece on GoldenEye this week, I recommend, or read it on any of historical pieces on it. You know, it took a small team a lot of work to make, and it's kind of for them, it was kind of a miracle success. They knew they had something special when they played the multiplayer for the first time with each other. IGN gave it a 9.7 at the time. Easy to remember because it came out in 97. Two quotes from that article from two different people, which is weird. One is from Doug Perry, who wrote the review. GoldenEye 007 is the best single-player first-person game on any system. So at that time, it contextualizes this as like, you know, the best first-person game, period. And then Pear had a second take in that article, and he said the best movie-to-game conversion yet. Because you have to like think about it in that context, right? It was like an amazing licensed movie game, and it could have easily
like
been a 2D platformer.
After the original movie, didn't it?
Yeah, so it just very, very goofy, like that this is what came out of it. So, Kat, you tell me that you have some experience with this and memories about
it. Oh, yeah. I was playing a lot of GoldenEye when I was in middle school, and my main memories of it, my friend had it, and we started playing it, and I mean, at that time, first-person shooters on consoles were not a thing, because we had kind of come to think of, you know, the Super Nintendo, like Doom and Wolfenstein and whatnot, and Super Nintendo. It's like, but it's just, it's not as good. It's a PC genre. PC genre always. And so this was the first time that GoldenEye on a console, or a first-person shooter on a console, actually made sense. Now, in hindsight, controls are very wonky. Basically, I have to stop to be able to aim. Like, I was still kind of learning how to do 3D aiming mentally.
I think this taught a lot of people 3D aiming, and then it taught them wrong because the controls ended up being different for dual stick shooters, which we all had to learn.
I didn't like James Bond at the time. This made me kind of like James Bond because it was a cool opening. I loved the James Bond sting with the spotlight and everything. That music by Grant Kirkhope in the first level, so good.
So good.
The guitar and everything. I was reading some retrospectives on GoldenEye. The level design in that game was really special and is what really stands the test of time. It was a stealth game, which is something that a lot of people kind of forget.
Full of secret stuff, too, like little secret passages and secret hidden things and stuff. I really like that about it.
Killing a lot of people in bathrooms.
Yes.
Yep.
Headshots.
Yeah.
It kind of pioneered headshots in first-person shooters. Yeah. And, of course, if you were playing with your friends, I mean, if you were playing four players, it was going to run at like 15 FPS, as we're seeing in this B-roll right here. But it was so much fun to get the proximity mines. Like, we had the friends who were really good with the rocket launcher. There were the friends who were really, really good with just the straight-up the M16 or whatever.
And you could turn off every... You could do a lot of manipulation, right? So you could just play with proximity mines. Is that right? Yeah. You could do that? I remember from Perfect
People
Dark.
Would just set them up and sit, and then you would just laugh because you would see the upper left corner going, dying. And you'd be like, ha-ha-ha.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You could always see where your friends were. So it was like a very special
time. The earliest kill cam.
It was a kill cam.
It was such a place in time. Because I was quite young, but I played this with a lot of my friends. And we would, like, get off the school bus, and someone would just be like, golden guns and facility, odd job. And we all were just like, yep. And then we would just go and play the game. And it was just so much fun. I played it again recently. And as much as I loved the game growing up, this has maybe got the award from me personally for maybe, like, the worst aged game I've ever played.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes down to just how much first-person shooters have evolved since then, especially on consoles. It's just really hard to go back to. But I have, like, such fond memories of that game. I remember that game so much more than I remember the movie. Like, because I remember someone telling me that...
I barely remember the movie. I remember the satellite, that's it.
Well, because Sean Bean was 009
that's
or something
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told me that recently, and I was like, Sean Bean is in GoldenEye?
And he dies.
I was like, oh, yeah. Spoiler. And I guess that character wasn't that game, but those faces were just so, so flat.
That's right.
A random JPEG just on somebody's head. And so I was like, I guess that was Sean Bean.
How many people saw Tomorrow Never Dies because of GoldenEye?
Yeah, I bet that's true. Mm-hmm. I sometimes have a fantasy that, like, when I die, I get stats from my life. And, like, there's a good chance that, like, GoldenEye might actually be the video game I've spent the most time with in my entire life. It's probably World of Warcraft, if I'm being honest. But, like, we played GoldenEye every single day, just obsessively. Like, every single map, every single variation of the weapons and the paintball mode and the big head mode, all of it. And yeah, like you, Colin, we went back and played it for work. I guess even that's been like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
We're like, oh man, GoldenEye, this is going to be the best day. And it was horrible. Like, it was absolutely no fun at all. Like, I think, Kat, you're being really generous to say it's 15 frames per second. I think when it's four player, it's more like 12 frames per second. Like, it's rough, but, like, goodness gracious, it was revolutionary for the time.
I think we're seeing Sean Bean being karate chopped in the top right.
Is that Sean
right
Bean?
Now. I think that's Sean Bean. No, and I'm gonna give myself another midstream correction. He was 006, so no one comments. I corrected myself. He's 006 in that movie.
Well, he was probably I bet he did this and then Boromir back to back, because I think Lord of the Rings was filming for like 2 years right after. Well, actually, because this was 2 years after 007 GoldenEye already, so. Man, I don't know.
There's national treasures in there too.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, he probably died in like 5 films between them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and he made a career out of being good guys that turn out to be bad guys.
Yeah.
Three movies in a row.
Yeah.
And then dying.
Trustable face. Okay, that brings us to video game 20 questions. This week's game comes to us from Oshawa, Ontario, Canada, and Peter submitted this. So
that helps you, so be it. To remind everybody, you can ask yes or no questions. You get 20 of them, but you have, the 20th one has to be the game guess. So you really have 19 questions to narrow it down. By 20, you got to make that the decision. Let the questioning begin.
Is the game GoldenEye? No. Is this a console exclusive?
What if you got it in one question?
Wow.
That would be incredible.
It was not a console exclusive upon release. And normally I'd say yes or no, okay. But I just don't want to get into it.
Gotcha.
Did it...
Go ahead,
wait, sorry. Hold on. Let me think about how to say this. The first question you asked, was it a console exclusive?
Yes.
I have to retract. Man, I'm already screwing this up. I'm so sorry, everybody. So, upon launch, this was not a console exclusive, is I think how Damon would do it.
Okay. So, okay. Maybe a PC exclusive is probably what he's alluding to. Okay.
That's one question.
Okay.
Did it come out after 2001?
No, it did not.
Okay.
Okay. Did it come out in the 90s?
Yes, it did.
Was this made by a developer that is still making games?
Man, I was really hoping we would have this one. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
But that's not going to help you at all.
At all. Okay.
So when this game came out in the 90s, did it come out on the PC?
Yes, it did.
Do we want to try to get genre? Where do we want to go next?
Sure. It's probably Baldur's Gate.
Was this game an RPG?
No, it was not an RPG.
Aw.
Ooh.
Okay, so PC, so it's this real-time strategy, is PC-heavy genre. Not that it has to be a PC-heavy genre. I'm just thinking about, like, 90s-era PC gaming was, like, different than what it is today.
We've been talking about adventure games.
There was a lot of Sims.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of tycoon games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of adventure games, as Kat pointed out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good one, Kat.
Okay. Is it an adventure game?
No, not an adventure game.
Son of a bitch.
Real-time strategy? That would be my next guess. My first thought was Blizzard, honestly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Same.
Was it made by Blizzard?
No.
Well, not Blizzard. Okay.
Shoot.
That's 8.
Mm-hmm. If we wanted to try to get, like, tycoon-type games down, would we call those simulation games? What would we put those under?
Sure.
Yeah. Is this a simulation game?
Yes.
Simulation game. Okay.
I love it. Okay.
SimCity.
Rollercoaster Tycoon, SimCity, yeah. Zoo Tycoon.
Should we ask if it has Sim in the name or...
Tycoon in the
name?
Or
if it has Tycoon in the name as two separate... potential questions.
I generally dissuade title questions, like, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
doesn't start with fine. A C or whatever, you know.
It sort of bends the there's a gentleman's agreement when it comes to 20
fair.
Questions.
That's fair.
We learned early on that just mathematically it would only take us like 5 questions to know what letter of the game it started with. And
okay,
so
yeah, that would be cheap. Okay. Hmm. Okay, well, where do we want to go with this? How do we want to hone in?
I mean, yeah.
Maybe do you run a facility in this game?
Well, yeah, or Maxis, like Maxis makes all this a lot of sim pieces. Is this a Maxis game?
No.
Not Maxis. Mm.
Okay.
So, not SimCity, not the Sims.
Not that takes not a lot Sim of Ant. It takes a lot of sim games out of out of the picture for the 90s, I think.
Mm. That's 10.
Should we ask that facility question? Do you run some sort of business in this game? Should I say that?
Yeah. Sim. Yeah, it's interesting because sim is an interesting genre, right? Where like sim is also like power wash simulator, which I know is not,
sure.
I know it's not a 90s game, but like there's these two sides of the sim game spectrum.
That's true. I feel like that's more of a modern sim type of thing, but there were also like, you know, hunting sims and stuff like that on the PC back then. So okay, I'll do it the way I was planning. Do you run some sort of business in this game?
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. Running? So it could be Roller Coaster Tycoon still.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to go in that direction? Do we want to ask if you run a theme park?
Sure.
Do you run a theme park in this game?
Yes.
Okay. What else could it be?
I mean, there was I think there was a game called Sim Theme Park.
Was there really?
Roller Coaster.
That's so cheesy. I think
there was a Sim Everything.
Yeah.
And most of them are bad.
Is Roller Coaster Tycoon the only one that you could remove part of a roller coaster and then jettison people off the roller coaster mid-ride?
I mean, it's tough to prove the negative, but I mean, we all spent a tremendous amount of time doing that in Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Can you do what I just described? Can you remove a piece of a roller coaster while people are riding on it?
I don't know.
Right. Okay.
Sam's not sure. Okay. It's gotta be Roller Coaster Tycoon, but there are three of them in the 90s.
That's true.
One might have snuck into the year 2000.
Without asking explicitly if what number is in it, I have no idea how to differentiate between them.
Is this the beginning of a series, the first game in a series?
Yes, that's 13.
Okay. It's almost certainly Roller Coaster Tycoon. But I don't know how to, like...
If we go for it, is that the end?
Yes. No second guesses on the game. Yeah, but we... See, but Kat, I cowboyed it maybe 2 weeks ago, and then I led us astray.
Did you?
It was Just Cause 2, and then the game was 3 or whatever.
We were real
that
close.
Was like your last question, right?
For God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, but I don't know... I think it's got to be real. Is it Roller Coaster Tycoon?
Yes.
Woo!
Yay! 10 questions. Yeah, it came out March 22nd, 1999 for PC. Was ported to the Xbox in 2003, which I think I remember that being a thing. Like, Xbox was like, we got Roller Coaster Tycoon. You know what else it was ported to in the 2000s? A pinball machine.
What? Of course it was.
Ooh. What?
Yeah, it's
So it was just a pinball machine, right?
It's
you
just
weren't actually doing any.
Yeah, okay. It's just Roller Coaster Tycoon, and you know, it was an interesting game. So the developer question's funny because it was developed by Chris Sawyer, one person.
Yeah.
He still making games?
He did. He ducked back in to make mobile games. Like, that's the most recent entry on Wikipedia about him. So I don't really know. Like, the answer to that was yes. You know, like.
Well, Chris Sawyer, you made a lot of human beings very happy playing this video game.
So. I think so, right? And then published by Hasbro Interactive.
Yeah. I flash on Roller Coaster Tycoon, like, a lot. Like, I think about that game pretty frequently because, like, there's such a resurgence. There was even one at Gamescom. There was a new...
That's right. There's the meta. Like, there's the meta, Justin.
Yeah, there you go. But, like, you know, they just... There's Two Point Campus and Two Point Hospital, and there's Planet... Planet Coaster, and then there's a new one they announced today. Like, these simulation business sim games owe a lot to Roller Coaster Tycoon, and it's really, really good. And I don't know if it's like playable on computers in 2022. I would be interested in playing it again.
I think Tycoon came up like around question 7 or 8, which is really well done. So good work, everybody. That was a good one. And that brings us to the end of the show. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Kat. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Colin. Damon will be back next week. Remember, you can always contact us. Really, you can just contact Damon. He'll forward stuff to us at gamescoop@ign.com. This is IGN GameScoop, and we are out.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait. The excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to Season 1, we are thrilled to announce the launch of Season 2. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make Season 2 even more memorable together.